Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin, sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin, it's how we get there.
Because I don't want to go backwards. I want to keep going forward together. That's exactly where we're going to go. God bless
you. I'm Steve Walders.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
This is Rewind, Wisconsin Eye's look at a very, very busy week in the Capitol. Wisconsin Eye this week broadcast 30 and a half hours of live coverage of the Assembly and the Senate. So we had tons of opportunities for WISI was there, but we are very selective. So WISI was there, the debate over how you attract millennials, and still time to get your flu shot. UW professor Kathy Kramer talks about the low voting rate of UW-Madison students. What would have happened if the federal government, the Air Force, had not picked Truax Field for F-35s? WISI was there.
I asked my friends on Facebook a simple question. Here's what it said, verbatim. Millennial friends from Wisconsin, why did you move away? What would get you to move back? I moved to Michigan for grad school. I haven't moved back, though I'd like to be closer to my family because it doesn't feel like a good time to be entering science research in the UW system. Wisconsin feels like a sinking ship in terms of scientific research. But if we're not seriously digging into this issue about why people move away and what'll bring them back, whether it's $7 million, $7, or $700 million, we're wasting our money.
To some of the comments that I heard from the other side of the aisle saying that millennials have no reason to come to Wisconsin, tell that to people working at Epic. Tell that people working at Oshkosh Corporation, with Foxconn, with other companies that continue to find Wisconsin being open for business. This is not going to end. This is a solution to a problem. The other side likes to talk about lots of anecdotes, but doesn't seem to want to offer any solutions.
When we talk about infant mental health or early childhood mental health, I've had people say to me, what do you, put a three-year-old on a couch and do psychotherapy? No, it's all of these things that really change the trajectory for children at a very, very young age. And it can make a difference. And we have almost 13 years of research to prove it.
We still have a significant portion of the season ahead of us. Get immunized.
I mean, the underlying problem is turnout among young people is just historically been low, and it's lower now than it has been for generations. And so it's an issue that people who care about democracy are really concerned about, and she thought, well, maybe this is one way to address it.
We mentioned these are 1987 F-16, so at some time they're reaching the end of their service life. So the Air Force, what they do is recapitalize, they transition aircraft from one to another. So it's real important to sustain the 115th Fighter Wing is to compete for that next generation. So if the fighter wing was not selected for the F-35, it would put the wing at risk.
Juvenile corrections reform is the first major policy we've had in 8 years. The Lincoln Hills reform is really aimed at better outcomes, keeping kids and staff safe, lowering recidivism, and saving money. If we were to look at some of the bills that are being discussed for tomorrow, and we read Speaker Voss's comments towards the end of the year, they're talking about building a new prison to address what the repercussions with some of the penalties would be in this state.
We're going to take up SB 54 either today or tomorrow, in one
tomorrow
of the two days.
Yeah.
We're going to have an amendment on that bill that will provide for bonding authority to build a new prison. As you all are aware, we passed in the budget a study to take a look at our prison situation. We already know we're 140%.
Roughly 140.
Over capacity. So we know that report's going to come back and tell us we have to have an additional prison. So we're just speeding up that process because we're going to end up doing it next session anyway, and giving the authority there to take care of that issue.
Tuesday primary, mm-hmm. Supreme Court. Narrow the field from 3 to 2. Let's go through just the totals. Sauk County Judge Mike Skronik, 46%. Milwaukee County Judge Rebecca Dallant, 36%. Madison Attorney Timothy Burns, 18%. Now, that's just the totals. I know you've been spending a lot of time on where you think the race goes from here. So look ahead, please.
The things I've been told to watch for are kind of three big things. One, how much more will conservatives spend on the April election, what they already spent on this primary? Will progressives have the resources to compete? And who's going to be motivated come April? To take them one by one, remember, between the Wisconsin Alliance for Reform and mostly WMC, I counted at least $600,000 in TV and radio, according to One Wisconsin Now.
Third-party spending on behalf of Skronik.
You know, One Wisconsin tracks media buys, those are their numbers. I saw $142,000 in the state GOP, so that's $800,000 at least that we saw from those two organizations. That's a lot of money for a primary.
It's almost three times what the Skronik campaign spent, right? Yeah. Maybe two and a half.
So how much more is in the tank? For Dalit, what's interesting to watch is, you know, how much can progressives put up to compete with their conservative coalition? If they're going to do $3 million, she can't get outspent 4-1. You know, it's got to be, it won't be parity necessarily. Democrats will tell you they'll always get outspent in races, but it can't be a huge disparity in finances. And then third, who's motivated? And the questions I'm looking for that are, we've talked about a blue wave possibly coming. So now on Tuesday you saw Skronik placed first at 46%.
Yes.
You combine Dalit and Burns at 54. But
which Scott Ross did at One Wisconsin Now. But
it's
not that simple.
It's an imperfect exercise.
It is.
So I don't know if there's a clear indication from Tuesday that this is a blue wave election. Also, don't forget that Supreme Court races are not perfect indicators of the fall. It's a different kind of beast. But what I'm watching for are things like Rebecca Dalit. Will she pivot to a more traditional Supreme Court message in the general election? She is a former prosecutor, handled, I don't know how many, like 10,000 cases on the bench, 10,000 as a lawyer or something like that. Mm-hmm. Talk experience, her background, more of a kind of middle-of-the-road type message. Other things are like the abortion issue. Republicans are hemorrhaging Republican women right now, or suburban women right now. It's one thing to be to oppose abortion rights on various fronts, but blocking access to abortion clinic when you're a younger man, that's something you can use effectively with certain segments of the population in targeted mail, digital ads, those kinds of things. How will that be used? Things like that I'm watching. She's from Milwaukee. He's from Sauk County.
And just on that note, JR, you walked out and said in one of your newsletters, the Milwaukee County turnout in this primary was about 30,000 less than the primary in 2016.
Yeah.
That's pretty, it could be significant for
all the things about what's going to motivate people come April to turn out. So, again, and one thing about Tim Burns' strategy, Tim Burns made a gamble on not just kind of reaching progressive voters, but getting national groups excited about this race, because people tell me there's not enough money in Wisconsin on the progressive side by itself to match a conservative coalition. So will Dalit excite those national groups to come in and spend money on this campaign? Now, we saw that Eric Holder's group talk about competing in the Supreme Court race this spring in Wisconsin. Yeah. So what do they do?
Rick Essenberg is out tweeting today saying he expects Holder to come into this race.
Mm-hmm.
You've been told that?
That they indicated that they wanted to play in this race. So things like that. For Skronik, you know, he's going to hammer. What I'm anticipating is going to happen is that Dalit's had those thousands of cases. They will find some clunkers. You know, every judge has them, if you've been on the bench long enough, of, like we saw one already about a light sentence for somebody's accused of a child molesting or something like that.
Yeah.
So
attempted child enticement.
See like three or four clunkers. They'll put them in ads and they will pound the heck out of them. You know, try and make undercut her message of being, you know, this tough on crime judge.
Yeah.
And then two, they will try to hold her accountable for like the primary race she ran, where she was talking. She had Donald Trump in her TV ad. She talked about our values. They're going to trade her as an activist. So what message wins out?
And you and I got the email yesterday from Tim Burns saying, I'm sending money to Rebecca Dalit, which is an endorsement. So that you and I wondered when it would come, not and how soon it would come,
and how big
of an endorsement.
I actually wondered a little bit if it would come, because it wasn't a pleasant race at times. And I was told that they weren't real friendly. But that email suggests that he also tweeted this morning not only that he has already donated one to her once, he's going to donate to her more often because of Skronik's positions. Republicans will tell you or argue that you can't naturally assume that Burns voters are going to be Dalit voters, because he appealed to a certain segment of the population, right? So that's going to be, again, that fine line for the walk of appealing to those voters, plus the middle and even like right-of-center voters who sometimes decide Supreme Court races.
And didn't you also report this week the Dane County turnout in the primary was 4,000 votes higher than 2016? Okay.
And don't forget, in the Supreme Court in the spring, on TV, it was basically the Skronik message in places like Green Bay, Wausau, Rhinelander, Eau Claire, La Crosse. There was no... Dalit and Burns are only on TV in Milwaukee and Madison.
Yeah.
So there's an opportunity to pick up more votes for Dalit in those outstate markets with the right message. And that's something to watch, too.
Yeah, but the April 3rd general election for Supreme Court hasn't set up yet.
No, there's nothing else on the ballot. I mean, there's no big county executive race, no big mayor race. I mean, some supervisor races. I don't mean to diminish those, but nothing that usually drives turnout. Like, so this is going to be the main driver. So we're probably going to see more like an 800,000, 900,000 person turnout in April versus the 2.some million 2 years ago because of the presidential primary in the ballot at the same time.
Right. Okay, new topic. This time in the Capitol, the voices of high school students who are afraid of mass shootings didn't come from Florida, weren't in Washington, weren't in Tallahassee. Some of those were in Madison. So let's begin the gun control debate and how it played out in Wisconsin's Capitol with this video of a Madison student, and then we'll go to debate from both sides in both Assembly and Senate. Let's go to that video, please.
How do you expect students to be successful when kids have to worry about themselves, their friends, and their teachers being shot? School shootings have been a reality for me my whole life. From kindergarten, I've been learning how to sit under a desk and be silent so that a shooter doesn't hurt us. This is not something that a five-year-old should have to think about. Kids are dying for your right to own a gun. Is your gun really worth hundreds of lives? It should not be that easy for a 19-year-old to get a hold of a semi-automatic weapon. He couldn't have taken 17 lives with a knife. Dangerous people having easy access to guns is the problem.
The gentleman from the 38th offers an amendment which deals with the issue that folks all across Wisconsin have been seeing on their television screens. People want us to make sure that kids who are at schools are safe. I proceed with the assumption that everyone in here wants to make that sure that children inside schools are safe. So there is no doubt in my mind that this amendment, drafted by the gentleman from the 38th, is clearly germane to a bill which ensures that all folks, children included, are safe both inside and outside of school.
There is a body of evidence that shows that background checks do indeed keep guns out of the hands of those intent to do harm, as we have seen again and again in the 8 school shootings that we have seen already this year, and the many more mass shootings that happen outside of schools every single year. Mr. Speaker, 90% of Americans, in poll after poll, support universal background checks. Okay. There is nothing in this amendment that addresses what those background checks address. I don't even see the word background check anywhere in this amendment. Mr. Speaker, this is a bait and switch at its finest.
I think we should look at this big picture. It's a huge issue. I just talked to a psychiatrist who issued a major paper for a national psychiatry group, and there are a lot of issues that are in his paper that we need to look at, because he has real issues that we have to look at and address. It's not a snap decision that we can make.
People run to mental health, mental health, mental health. We need to do more on mental health services. And we keep saying we need to identify the mental health cracks with these shooters. But what about the mental health of the survivors? What about the mental health of those students? I do not accept that this is the way it has to be.
Okay, JR, let's talk about the gun control debate. Mm-hmm. The Assembly Democrats tried to pull a bill on background checks. The Assembly Republicans said, let's table that and let's offer some grants for armed security officers in the schools. Now, that's just the Assembly side. That passed the Assembly. In the Senate, they went for a bill that would outlaw, make a felony, straw gun purchases. Mm-hmm. Now, last night in this marathon 12-hour session, the Assembly sent that to the governor. Then you also had Attorney General Schimmel, before Mr. Trump said whatever he said, suggesting that it might be wise to let teachers be armed and he'd be willing to train them. So what's your take on the gun control?
Don't forget the Senate also tried, the Democrats tried to amend a bill, sparsity aid, to allow an increase for safety measures. I mean, on the one hand, for Democrats, they care deeply about these issues. They have for a long time. But somebody's been around the Capitol for a long time, you know, there's also about roll call votes. Roll call votes end up in mailers in October that make the case of your lawmaker, this candidate, opposed X, Y, and Z. Mm-hmm. He or she's a bad person because of it. So there's a dual track there. They want to make a point, especially after what happened in Florida a week and a half ago, that this is an important issue. We should be addressing this. But, oh, by the way, this will be part of the fall discussion as well. They want to get them on a bad vote about background checks. It's a 90-plus percent issue, depending on what poll you look at.
Yeah.
And, you know, Republicans were put in a box of, okay, what do we do? They came out with this idea of the security grants to try and get away from that issue and pivot toward that, and then put Dems in the defensive. There's like this dance that goes on in these things, trying to pin each other down about a bad vote to hold them accountable for.
But the point is, all the emotion nationally that we saw came to our Capitol on one day. Okay, new subject. The Assembly and Senate leaders cannot agree on the governor's tax proposal, $100 per child tax credit, and the Assembly got the governor to go along with the sales tax holiday on August 4 that would exempt items that cost less than $100. So how do you read the Assembly? What was the vote last night in the Assembly? I have it somewhere. Anyway, 61-35, Dems, Shields, and Young voted yes. The Republicans, Prochinsky and Jarko, voted no. They sent it. Is that a take it or leave it to the Senate, which, as you said, is coming back March 20th?
The Assembly wants it to be, but I just don't know if it is. We are engaged in a game of political chicken right now. Take a step back. I mean, Governor Walker, look at his State of the State address and the agenda he laid out. They've knocked out, in somewhat impressive fashion, a big to-do list. I mean, the sparsity aid bill passed both houses. Reinsurance, that was this huge lift. It passed with bipartisan majorities.
Talk about that in a minute, yes.
So we've got a lot of stuff got knocked out. We have big votes on juvenile prisons, still up in the air, and some other stuff. This is the one thing that is like a dead standoff right now. And what you have is, on one side, some Republicans don't want to see just the rebate, because to them, that doesn't hit enough people. So they added the sales tax holiday to spread the wealth a little bit. Some Republicans have been on record in the past rejecting the idea of sales tax holiday as a gimmick. Now, Republicans, if you ask them quietly, they will tell you the whole rebate check is a gimmick thing no matter what, I mean, just in general. But the sales tax holiday is especially sticking the craw of Senate Republicans, because they've said, look, we don't like it before. We think it's $50.8 million that they don't like spending, because they don't want to spend all of the surplus that we have. They'd rather just a straight credit and be done with it. And Robin Voss is saying, no, we have to have this to make us happy. So Robin Voss passed it out of the Assembly, the Senate of the Senate. Fitz is saying, I wasn't part of that deal. There's a problem there. So now what happens? You could have joint finance, which, by the way, hasn't met. They're supposed to meet this week. Have not met yet about this bill.
Well, Nygren said, we're not going to meet on this issue unless there's a deal.
Unless there's a deal. So if they could find a deal, if they could pass it, Senate could then take it up and send it back to the Assembly, either amend it and send it back, or they could take it and say, okay, we're going to suck it up and pass a bill the way somebody did it, send the governor. So the question is, what does Scott Walker do? Whose arm does he have to twist to get this done? I mean, for all the things I ought to say the state address, this is the centerpiece of his kind of plan, right? This is the big thing you want to focus on in that speech that day. So now what? And I honestly don't know how they get this box right now. They're at the end of session. They basically, Republicans had enough of each other after the last year and a half. They just
want to
go home. Yeah. It was a budget that dragged out till September. If you look at some of the things they're adding to bills going back and forth, there are poison pills, we call them in this business. There are people unhappy about deals being cut without them being part of it. They've had enough. They need to get away from each other, and this is like the last gasp of what they're going to do. So what I'm sensing is going to happen is that Scott Fitzgerald and his Republican caucus will take a week or so, let the dust settle, get the whole list of bills coming from the Assembly, say, okay, what can we as a caucus do? Because traditionally, you have to have 17 votes to pass a bill. Now, we saw a little geek out side note here. Store tax credit only got 15 Republican votes this week, which was like, whoa, what happened there? But anyway, traditionally, at least 17 votes from that caucus.
Yeah.
Of that list of bills, what can they get to 17 on? That'll be the calendar for March 20th. They'll knock those things out.
Okay, but let's take it one step further. Some of the issues that the Senate could vote up or down, kill or pass, in March, let's list them. The tax credits for Kimberly-Clark to try to preserve 600 jobs, that is no small price tag on that. They want 17% on the jobs. They want 15% on equipment, and will waive the sales taxes on any equipment to upgrades. That passed the Assembly late last night. Spending $4 million to hire 53 more assistant district attorneys was added to Senator Vukmir's go back to prison.
Revocation bill.
Yes.
For a violent misdemeanor or a felony, if you're charged with one. They also added $350 million in bonding for a new prison.
That's where I was going next. That's right. Saying that, yes, we recognize, well, we have two aged and decrepit prisons in Waupun and Green Bay. We're going to need a new prison. San Filippo and Voss said that. Grants for armed school security officers was passed by the Assembly. That doesn't seem to be going anywhere in the Senate.
No, and that the poison pill I was referencing before, that revocation bill, Robin Voss is not a fan from what I understand, because there wasn't a money attached. Because if you are going to revoke parole for people, there'll be more people in prison. There's no money attached to house these folks. So he added these provisions, the assistant district attorneys plus this. Yep. To them, that's good policy. You know, if you're going to require people to go back to prison on for parole revocation, you got to house them. You got to give AD, you know, district attorneys the resources to handle their caseloads. But Senate Republicans, that's more spending. And they want nothing to do with that right now. Why not do it in the budget, they're thinking. So that's going to be a tough bill to get done.
And one other thing is $7 million to recruit millennials and veterans to come to Wisconsin for the jobs. Okay, let's look quickly at some things that did get final legislative action. Let's look first at the $200 million subsidy of the Affordable Care Act by premiums. This would stabilize the Obamacare premiums bought by 216,000 Wisconsin residents. It would pay 80% of claims between $50,000 and $250,000 starting in 2019, which means you don't have to deal with the 50% cost factor until the next budget, 2019-2021. The state share of costs would be $50 million in anticipated Medicaid savings. The governor is copying plans from Minnesota and Alaska, but if you look at Politico's story today, these plans failed in Iowa and Oklahoma. So this is on his desk. He's going to sign it. He calls it a major health care reform. Yeah.
This
your,
is
your take?
The suburban women we talked about before who are leaving the Republican Party, health care is one of their number one issues, like their number one issue. This is a nod toward that dynamic. If you look at some of the things that Walker proposed, a lot of them check boxes of demographics that they need come November. The Rural Economic Development Fund, the $50 million, that is a nod toward rural voters who are going, hey, where's mine? We're worried up here, but Fox filing at $4.5 billion. The reinsurance thing was like the heaviest lift, it seemed like, at one point after the governor's speech.
Yeah.
Bipartisan votes in both houses. It passes with good margins. To one person told me that Republicans got convinced because they saw the polling. They saw what's going on out there, realized that they need to do something on this, and that's what helped push that through.
Look, with both houses considering 200 and 250 bills, I lost track of the $50 million rural development. Is that on the gov's desk, do you know?
I don't think it's going to, it's going back to this. I think the Senate has to pass it yet.
Okay. Also on the governor's desk, a change in wetlands protections. We can go through this quickly. Developers could fill up to 1 acre of wetlands in or near urban areas. Senator Coles, who negotiated a fundamental change in this, said the change won't bring the world to an end as far as overall volumes of wetlands. The chief sponsor in the assembly, the Assembly Majority Leader Jim Steinke, we reduced the scope of the bill from 1 million to 100,000. Democrats and environmental groups oppose the change. We're mentioning it because it's in the dialogue over protecting the environment, and the Democrats say the Walker administration has it, this is going to be a major issue, along with environmental changes approved as part of the Foxconn deal in the November elections.
Yeah, Republicans who backed the bill said they had pared it back significantly from the original version, which they did. So they're trying to make the case this is not a big deal, but it still will come up from fall.
Okay, and another November 6th issue is the limits on public assistance. Now, on the Senate floor, Senator Chris Capping has said public assistance should not go to anyone who has a $50,000 Lexus and a $500,000 home. That brought a response from Senator Lena Taylor. Let's listen to that video.
Food Share Wisconsin works and Wisconsin Shares. Those are programs that are for the needy. And pretty much the legislature and the people of the state of Wisconsin have said, you know what, we feel it's appropriate to use tax dollars to help the needy. What they didn't say is it's okay if you drive a $50,000 Lexus and have a $500,000 home and you can be on welfare. That doesn't quite add up. So what we're doing is we're actually putting some restrictions in place. This is a great bill. Mr. Chair, I hope to see unanimous support for safeguarding those in need and not allowing those who are not in need and driving $100,000, $50,000 cars to be on public assistance.
That does not really exist, Mr. President, those scenarios for individuals who are getting food stamps or those types of things. There are many factors that need to be considered. And very candidly, the effect that it will have on even small business owners that are in rural Wisconsin, like farmers, the effects of these requirements that you are putting on are not going to help move people to work. That's not what it's going to do. It's going to, in turn, provide more penalties. And I'm sorry, I just morally do not believe that we should be trying to penalize people who are hungry and are in need. I believe good hard work is good, but I do not believe that programs that are requiring individuals to connect and to do hours, but not giving them sites, specific sites in communities where that can be done, but I hear that maybe that will be able to be done, and doing it in a way that is penalizing them in this way versus incentivizing in a more positive and supportive way like they do, Mr. President, in your district, I believe it's the wrong direction.
When you say, JR, that someone could not qualify for food stamps and other programs if they own a home valued at this set amount and a car valued at this set amount, that's a pretty profound change. As long and in addition, another big change is if the federal government approved requiring someone on food stamps to work or get job training 20 to 30 hours per week. So I'm listing this as a separate topic because, number one, it's on the governor's desk, and the governor is going to run on this.
Yeah, absolutely. Interesting. Of the 10 bills are part of the welfare package, only one didn't get done. That was one that, by the Senate at least, that would put a photo ID on your food stamp card. The grocers raising concerns about that on a couple fronts. One, those cards can apply to the entire family, so if you have a large family, how do you get that picture of everybody on there? Two, they made the argument of things like they have contracts with certain vendors, and the vendors will say, you have to, you can't require a photo ID as a transaction with our credit card. Well, the feds say you have to treat everybody the same with a food stamp card versus other transactions, so there's a conflict there.
Yeah.
But that's the only thing to get done. The rest of them, I mean, they feel like those poll well, and that across the spectrum, they're going to be a benefit for them come November.
Okay, just real quickly, some other things that are still pending. $6.4 million more to about 100 rural, low-spending school districts. That's a governor's priority. He's going to sign that. Mm-hmm. The bill prohibiting abortion coverage and health care programs for state workers, probably going to sign that.
Mm-hmm.
And this fight over historic tax credits. The ledge says let's set it at $3.5 million, but the governor, through his veto on the budget bill, cut it back to $500,000.
Yeah.
Is he going to accept the $3.5?
Good question. It was going to go to $5 million in the budget. That change has taken effect. It's July 1st of this year, I believe it takes effect. But what was, again, interesting about that bill was that it didn't have 17 votes in the Senate from Republicans. That was kind of a shocker, but it got broad bipartisan support in both houses.
Okay, your stock picks rising.
So juvenile corrections.
The whole package passed by the assembly?
Unanimously.
95 zip.
Who would have guessed that, a month
ago?
Not me. So now, there's a caveat here. Just before we went on the air, Scott Fitzgerald earlier said he's got a problem with this bill because he wasn't part of the negotiations. But I was talking to people ahead of this week. They said, look, it was a unanimous vote. Beyond that, the counties are now on board. That was a big concern that Fitzgerald had. And what are you going to do, Senate, if you've got a unanimous vote in the Assembly, the governor wants it, says he needs it for November? We'll see once the dust settles what's going to happen. But that vote was fairly significant to have 95 members of the Assembly vote for the same bill. That's rare on something significant.
Republican Rep Mike Schraw said, when I went up to Lincoln Hills, talked to an inmate, I said, why are you here? He said, I'm here because my parents forgot my birthday and I acted out. That's just very emotional stuff. Okay, mixed.
Abortion opponents. So the bill we just talked about that would ban state employee health plans from providing abortion coverage, except in certain exemptions, that passed. But it passed in part because they didn't do the fetal tissue bills again, and they're not going to do a bill that would ban the teaching of abortion at UW-Madison, essentially. So it's kind of like a consolation prize in some ways for abortion opponents. That fetal tissue thing has been a priority for a long time. The Heal Without Harm Coalition has been pushing the more stringent version of that bill for a couple of years. It has gone nowhere. And they basically did that bill and kept the teaching one in the drawer for the session to end. Because Republicans, they've done so much in the last 7 years being in charge.
Yeah.
They're getting to things now that are very parochial, and they're like, we just don't want to deal with that stuff, because easier to make the argument of being pro-taxpayer by not using tax money to provide abortions versus being labeled as maybe anti-science or anti-healthcare.
Okay, and falling?
So Tim Burns, so we looked forward before, let's look back a little bit. Burns took a gamble with the Supreme Court race. He's not a judge. We like judges as our candidates for Supreme Court in Wisconsin. This is proven again and again. So he had to find a way to kind of make a case for himself to be elevated to the Supreme Court. He went for this unabashed progressive policy or campaign tactic. Didn't work out, 18%. But there's a method to that madness. I mean, he realized that he'd have a challenge, not having the robe, as we call it, Supreme Court races. He was trying to only excite progressive voters, but also national groups to come in come April. But the miscalculation was those Bernie Sanders-type voters, college kids, They don't turn out in February primaries. They turn out in November sometimes, but they're just not there in February, and so it's a miscalculation about who might be there for one February.
When I interviewed Mr. Burns, it surprised me when he said that some of the actions of President Trump should justify impeachment hearings. That was like, you're running for the state Supreme Court, that's nonpartisan, and he got out there on all those issues, a photo ID to vote. He just said, this is where I am, and a naked appeal to progressives, and he got 18% of the vote.
And what's interesting is somebody told me he failed the ceiling, he's above the fray. We like judges to be above the fray. So that was something that really worked in the end. And then look at Dane County. We're talking about like liberal bash of Dane County. Dalla got 50% there. To me, or in talking to people, the suggestion was primary voters made a calculation of electability. Even though we're talking like the hotbed of liberalism in Wisconsin, Dane County, they said, okay, this guy maybe have my heart, but Dalla's more likely to win come November. I'm going to go with her.
Wow, what a week. I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
That's Rewind for February 23.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. Sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. It's how we get there.